Hello, and welcome to Musings of a Stay-at-Home Dad podcast. I am Joe Curtis, and I am on a mission to connect and learn from other stay-at-home parents, to hear about their daily routines, their struggles and successes, and how they manage such a critical and challenging job.
This month on the podcast, I had the pleasure of talking with Dana from Salamanca, Spain. We discussed the differences between the U.S. and Spain for raising a family, lots of literature, and race, among other topics. I hope you enjoy. All right. Introduce yourself, your children, their ages, and how long you've been a stay-at-home parent.
Okay. Hi, my name is Dana, and I have two kids. So my firstborn is named Malachi. We call him Kai. And he is now 26 months, so 2 years. And second born is Micah. We call her Mai, and she is 7.5 months. So they're almost exactly 1.5 years apart.
Nice. Very cool. And you guys are currently living in Spain. How did you find yourself there?
So my husband and I just decided, like, when was this? And this is right before Trump became president.
We're like, 2016. Yes. Yes.
Yep. Sorry, not to put politics in.
No. Oh, yeah. No. Right.
But we just decided to have an adventure. Like, let's quit our jobs. Let's move somewhere overseas, learn another language. So after research, we chose Spain. We wanted to learn Spanish. So we quit our lives.
And did you know Spanish before going over there?
I didn't. I mean, I knew from high school one semester in college. So I barely knew anything. Yeah. My husband, a little bit. We practiced. We like did flashcards, and we're like, okay, we have a good foundation. Yeah. When we got to Spain, we're like, we know nothing. So we did an immersion like class where we did like, I don't know how many hours a day, 4 hours a day, 5 days a week, in like an immersion class setting, and then just like lived in Spain and went around talking. So we were just planning on being here for a year, but my husband's in real estate, so we started looking at houses randomly, and I was like, what are you doing? And we just fell in love with the city, and we found a house, and he was like, this is amazing, and decided to stay here in Spain.
Yeah. How did you choose, when you went over to Spain, did you go like Madrid, or did you just like find your place, their city that you're living now, or
what? We actually came to Salamanca. Okay. This is where we're living in Salamanca. We came here on purpose because we found out that it's a university town, and so there's a lot of schools here that we could go to. You know, we didn't go to the university, but there's a lot of other schools here that we could learn Spanish. Yep. And the accent in Salamanca was pretty accent neutral.
Okay.
So like if you go down to the south, the accent's pretty intense and it's hard to understand, at least from our perspective. And so we were like, okay, let's go to a place where there's like not a strong accent and it's a smaller city. So like opposed to like Madrid or Barcelona, smaller city, not as overwhelming. So.
And where were you coming from in the U.S.?
Well, we're living in Seattle.
Oh, okay. Nice.
So I'm from Seattle and my husband's from Houston, Texas, but we were living in Seattle.
Nice. Very cool. And so you're living there, you're starting to raise a family. How about comparisons versus raising kids in the U.S. versus Spain? What do you think?
Yes. So I guess to give another little background of why we decided to stay, this kind of goes hand in hand. So when we came to Salamanca, there's a couple reasons why we decided to live here. One, I have a lot of food allergies in the States, so I'm allergic to, like, everything. Gluten, eggs, dairy, like, corn, sugar, everything.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, it's really intense, so I don't even know what I eat there in the States. But I came to Spain, and I started just, you know, kind of having an open mind. I was like, I'm just going to kind of try things, and I found that I can eat almost everything here.
Wow. Wow.
Huge difference. Yeah. The biggest for me is dairy because I have a huge reaction to dairy in the States.
Yeah.
And here, whole milk, no problems.
Wow.
So it's just crazy. So I was like, okay, freedom for that. Food is way healthier here. And food is seafood is cheaper, it's more affordable, it's more accessible. So we were like, okay, for raising kids, we don't have to worry so much about them just having sugar overloads and icky gluten and, you know, the dairy issues and whatever. So that was a big thing for us as far as like living here. I don't have as much stress around food for me and for the kids.
That's huge. Really cool. Yeah.
Another reason is my husband is Black, and so when we came here to Salamanca, he especially noticed that there's just a huge difference as far as how he gets treated. Racism is still here. I mean, racism is everywhere all over the world, but it manifests itself a lot differently here. He feels a lot safer, even like around policemen, around, you know, just the everyday person. He doesn't get as much microaggressions towards him. And he just felt like he could not have to look over his shoulder all the time. And so then we were thinking like, okay, when we have kids, we want them to experience that freedom and not for us also to be living in that fear, you know, of like raising a Black boy in the United States. And we're still going to go back to the United States. And so we still have to be aware of that situation. But, you know, our everyday life here, it just really makes a big difference.
So better for everybody, it sounds like, and feel more comfortable, the eating and just the stress level. Wonderful to hear. And so how did you decide that stay at home was the right choice for you while you were in Spain?
So that's a good question. So I've always thought that I'd probably be a stay at home mom, but I kind of realized that when I tried to go to grad school and work at the same time. I got a job working as a children's director at my church, and I was like, okay, yeah, it's part-time, I can go to grad school as well. And I started working, and then I was like, oh my gosh, like I'm just one of those people who I have a hard time dividing my attention and my passions. And I was like, I don't think having kids, you know, kind of relating it to that, I don't think that I could divide like my attention with having kids, raising kids, wanting to be the mom, and then also having to separate myself and go to work and do that back and forth. And I could do it if I had to, but I have the privilege of not having to. And so I get the choice of being able to just devote all of my time to my kids. And that's just more my personality.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah. Well, and it kind of seems like too with staying home, it helps because your husband, his schedule is a little different than others. Can you tell us a little bit about his work schedule?
Yes. So my husband works on Pacific time. So he starts work at about 6 p.m. and he ends work at about 3 a.m. So, and then he stays up for another 2, 3, 4 hours sometimes working on other odd end jobs and helping me with like the nighttime. If Kai wakes up and Micah wakes up at the same time, he's there to help me. And then he'll go to bed around 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. and then sleep until 2 or 3 p.m.
And how long has he been doing that schedule? Is he adjusted to that now? Or?
Yeah, he's totally adjusted. And he's a night owl. He's always been a night owl. I would die.
Yeah, I can't. Oh, man. But it works for him, so that's good.
It works for him. So.
And I hear, and so you have an au pair that is comes in and helps support since he is on such a different schedule than you guys.
Yeah. Yes, between COVID, so we weren't going to have an au pair, but between COVID and the lockdown and not having any help from our family or even friends here, we were like, we have to have extra help. I mean, even just for, you know, when I had to go to the hospital to have Micah because of COVID, you know, we couldn't bring Kai. And just things like that, we had to have somebody else to be with Kai and the extra help. So we got an au pair. And then so she does help me with the morning routine. And then she goes home in the middle of the day when Warwick's awake. Mm-hmm. And then when he goes back to work, she comes back and she helps me with the nighttime routine.
Nice.
So it's very helpful.
Yes, that is. And and how are you coping without your parents and their support and just kind of having them be emotional rather than physical support?
It was one of those things where I had to, like, cry a lot and mourn the whole reality or situation. You know, at the beginning when Warwick was like, hey, I think we need to get extra help, like an au pair coming, I was like, I don't want a stranger in our house. I just want my mom. And I had to journal and just let it all out and really mourn the fact that my mom wasn't going to be here for Micah's birth. That was our plan, that she was going to come for the birth. Yeah. And that they might not see Micah for her first year of life. So it's been really sad. It's been really sad for everybody.
I'm sick. Yeah, I imagine with the new baby with COVID. It's very challenging. I'm sorry. Is there any grace that you've been feeling that, you know, is there some good connections you're allowed to have through online talking that helps cope with that?
Yes, I kind of live on an app called Marco Polo. I don't know if you've heard
of it. Yeah, my wife loves it. Yes, woman made, and yeah, she loves it. Yeah.
It's so nice, especially with kids and the time difference. You know, like with my parents, it's like 9-hour time difference, 8-hour time difference from here to Seattle. And so I just don't have a lot of time to get online.
Yeah.
And so Marco Polo gives me the option of popping on whenever I want, and then I can, like, watch my, you know, my mom's video or whoever and respond. So I use that a lot. Yeah.
How has your relationship with work and change, adjust as you transition to stay-at-home parenting and just a parent in general?
Yeah. You know, stay-at-home parenting, adding kids can always will change the relationship, right? And then add COVID on top of that. It's taught us a lot about the importance of communication. Like, we have learned, okay, there's moments that we have not communicated and expectations have not been met, and we're like, oh, this is why we're arguing, because we didn't communicate. And with kids, we just feel like we have to communicate so much more and so much more efficiently. Like, okay, what are we going to do today? We're going to do this, 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 this. This is the plan. If we want to get anything done, we just have to communicate. So that's been the biggest change in our relationship, is communication.
And I know you guys are married 5 years before kids, and Emily and I too were married 4, and we're able to travel a little bit, like you guys are traveling, live in different places. Mm-hmm. That kind of help build that relationship, so when you have the kids, I feel like it's a little easier to have that. You built some strong communication and some backbone there,
which... I would recommend that. I mean, if anybody's, you know, first getting married and wondering when they should have kids, I would recommend waiting if they can. Because that foundation was really important for us.
Well, what are some of your current passions that you're able to do? Sorry.
So my current passions would be, one, I really am into, I guess, I don't know, into reading about BIPOC perspective and learning more about how to raise biracial, or they'll be viewed as Black in the United States, Black children. And I think that's just really important. And it's kind of my lifelong journey of trying to figure out, you know, how to best understand that perspective and be the best mom I can.
Yeah. Have you read any good books lately, or ones that you'd totally recommend that you have stuck with you?
Well, let's see. I just finished reading Americana.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I can't tell. Did you read that? Have you read that?
I've read about half of it.
It's about, like, people. Well, the main character is from Nigeria, and over to the United States. So it's like her experience living in the United States, and then she goes back, and it's very interesting.
Nice. Very cool. Yeah, I'm reading right now. Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man by Emmanuel Acho. He's a football player, or was a football player, and it just kind of lays everything out in a nice, I hate to say it's like a nice, neat package, but it's a very straightforward, here's what's going on, here's next steps you can do, and I've really been enjoying the book right now.
I'd love to know that one. What's that one called?
It's called Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man. Yeah, and then I've been kind of the same way. My last year, my goal was really to read more BIPOC, women and men, and just even like more joyful books. They're not even joyful, but just like, you know, just typical novels, just written by a Black woman or a Black man,
which
gives you much perspective. And so, reading books. I'm excited because I'm going to ask you about some parenting books, because you're the first person I had like some lists of ones that are on to read too, so we'll get to that in a little bit. But any other passions?
So another passion, of course, would be learning Spanish. We got to learn Spanish here, and I just feel like I'm gonna always learn Spanish, like a lifelong. Yes. It's my lifelong goal because I always want to advance to the next level, next level. I would love to be like fully fluent, local, know all the colloquialisms and everything. So
where are you at right now? Where do you feel like you're at right now with your Spanish?
So I'm conversational. I can have conversations, like casual conversations. Once it starts to get into like politics, and some maybe deeper concepts, I falter a little bit, but I feel like I'm conversational.
So you can go about the city, get what you need, talk with people. Yes, connect. Awesome. Nice. Cool. And then I saw a little bit of are you kind of food? You kind of talk about food and healthy eating. And...
My other passion is, well, I would say baking is probably higher than cooking. I love cooking also, but baking is like my thing. I started experimenting in the States with like using different flours, non-gluten flours, different type of sugars because of my allergies.
Yeah.
And then when I came here, my husband is like, "Why are you still doing gluten-free baking?" He's like, "What are you doing?" I was like, "I just love it. I love experimenting with different recipes and stuff." So,
what would you say the best alternative flour for, say, a muffin would be? What is your...
My favorite combo, my favorite gluten-free combo flour is, I have a couple. Okay, so I'll say rice flour mixed with oat flour or millet flour, depending, and tapioca flour.
Okay.
So if you mix those three combinations, it's really good in cookies and most muffins as well.
Nice.
It's a yummy combination. I stay away. I don't like coconut flour and almond flour. Those are kind of the main basic ones people use, and I don't think they're very good. So I like the rice flour the most.
Okay.
And millet flour is really good.
Interesting. All right, cool. Quick six. First three questions about kids. Second three about you. Swing or slide at the playground?
Slide.
Cookie or muffins for Kai?
Muffins.
Pureed fruit or pureed vegetables for Mai Mai?
Pureed vegetables.
Second three about you. Coffee or tea?
Tea.
Football or football? Soccer?
American football.
Ordering takeout tonight, where are you going and what are you getting?
So we would go to a local place, or actually, we'd have it delivered. It'd be burgers and jeta, which is pig snout.
Quick six. Books on parenting. Are there any that you recommend that you're looking forward to maybe reading in the future?
Yes. So I would recommend, depending on if you're interested in food and feeding kids, I would recommend French Kids Eat Everything by Karen Le Bion. I think that's how you pronounce her name. It's a really interesting book to just hear the differences between what French kids eat versus what United States kids eat. It was really eye-opening to me.
Nice.
And then Imperfect Parenting by Brene Brown.
The Gifts of Imperfect Parenting.
So The Gifts of Imperfect Parenting by Brene Brown.
I love her.
And then I forget the other one.
No Drama Discipline.
Yes, sorry. Yes. Okay, yeah, and then No Drama Discipline by Dan Siegel and Tina...
Payne Bryce.
That one.
Yes. Nice.
That's a good one.
And it looks like you're looking forward to maybe wanting to read the Nurture the Wow. Looks like by Dana Rutenberg.
Yes.
And what do you? What's that one about, or what kind of excites you about
that
one?
So my friend recommended recommended that to me, and she said that she's coming from, I think, a Jewish perspective, but it's more about, like, spirituality, so it's, like, finding the spirituality within everyday life of raising kids.
Yeah.
So I felt like that was kind of an interesting topic.
Yeah. Nice. And Raising Cain?
Yeah, so my husband recommended that. He says, okay, I have to read it, and it's, he says it's about how to raise boys,
yeah,
and kind of like the perspective of raising a boy in our society today and what that looks like. So
I've heard that. I just can't picture. I was going to look at it before because I remember when I read that, I'm like, I've heard that before, but I don't have any recollection. So maybe that'll be the book choice.
Yeah.
And then Mindset, I saw it too.
Then Mindset by Carol Dweck.
Yeah.
So that one is more about, like, how do we talk to our children, and how do we teach them to have a growth mindset versus a
fixed mindset.
Well, we'll transition to with kids now, back to the stay-at-home parenting. What are some of your favorite activities to do with your children? I know it's COVID and you just had a COVID baby, I guess, so what are some things you enjoy to doing?
Yeah, so with Kai right now, we try to get out to parks as much as possible. And the amazing thing about Salamanca is there are 1,000 parks. I'm not even exaggerating. Like, we could probably go to a different park a day for like a month, right?
Nice.
There's so many parks. So we just try to explore different parks, and Kai loves going down the slides and the swings, and so we do that with him, and of course bring Micah with us. And then indoor activities, I really am starting to get more and more into doing like sensory activities.
Nice.
So that's been fun, and Kai's been enjoying that.
Cool. Nice. Any ones you recommend that you really enjoyed? Or Kai really enjoyed?
Yeah, I think his favorite so far has been rainbow rice.
Okay.
So we took rice and we dyed it with food coloring, and then we mix it all together, and he loves putting his little animals in it.
Nice.
Yeah, it's been really fun.
Cool. Yeah, I've seen that one around, but I have not tried that one. So
it's a good one. And we recently tried using, this is a fail, we tried using shaving cream.
Yeah.
And it was just so smelly. I have a bad brand or something, and I just could barely breathe. And then Kai would put it on his hands, and he doesn't like getting super messy, so he would look at me and be like, take it off.
Yeah.
So he'd have to run and wash it, and then he'd go put his hands back in it, but then he'd want it off again, and I was like, okay, that didn't work very well.
We tried. Yeah, there is, what did we do with shaving cream? We tried something with shaving cream, and it didn't really go as well either. And it was the kind of the smell. And just the texture. I don't know. It's a weird...
the texture's really icky.
Yeah. Yes. It's not pleasant to
hear
them. So, well, maybe some kids it is. But yeah, definitely. My boys did not enjoy it. So, but
yeah,
you try, you know, and then move on. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, what's something that surprised you about being a stay-at-home parent?
Something that surprised me is how much work it is. Like, I knew it was work, but it's exhausting. Like, it's more than exhausting. I can't explain it fully.
Well, and especially I feel like for you too, I mean, you at least knew it before COVID, but like without any support, having people there too, when it's just you, even like the weekends or any other time, it's just like always on 24/7.
24/7.
And I think you noticed that it's the next step, but, you know, Gus was not a great sleeper his first year, and they still struggle, and I mean, like, this past week we've been up every day at, like, 4:30 or 5, and that sleep, too, that throws you off, too, which then just makes that day even longer, and they're like, all right, well, we're doing it again tomorrow, and it is something that is just, it is hard to explain the level.
Like that type of exhaustion. It's so fulfilling. Like,
yes.
It's so rewarding and fulfilling. And that also I can't explain, like, how much it like fills up my heart, and like to have like my own children and running around in front of me and playing and growing and learning. And, you know, I just love watching all those things. And at the same time, it's so exhausting. It's this weird juxtaposition of like loving it and just being so exhausted at the same time.
Wonderfully exhausting, yes, for sure.
Yes, it's perfect. Wonderfully exhausting. I love that.
Well, and so what has challenged you with stay-at-home parenting?
The sleep is the biggest thing for us. Like, Kai has never been, quote-unquote, a good sleeper, but what is a good sleeper?
Yeah, I don't know.
He's never been a good sleeper. So even from the very beginning, like, when he was a newborn, he wouldn't let us put him down in the crib for, like, 3 months straight. We had to hold him all the time, or at least sleep, like, right next to him, which is really not fun for me.
You're not actually not a good sleep for you, by any means.
Not as much sleep for me. So, and even as a toddler, he just still doesn't sleep through the night very often. So having a newborn and then a toddler just night, so I'm waking up feeding the newborn, which is normal and expected, and then having to also get up for my toddler has been hard. So even with our extra help or au pair, I'm still, you know, during the nights, I'm just exhausted during the days. So
yeah,
been the hardest part for us.
What do you wish people knew about stay-at-home parenting?
I wish that people knew that even though you're a stay-at-home parent, you don't have to do it alone. Like, stay-at-home parenting is not a solo gig. It doesn't have to be a solo gig.
Nice. Well, what is the biggest thing you've learned about yourself to becoming a stay-at-home parent?
I am a type A personality, and the biggest thing that I've learned or, like, been working on is just letting go. It's, like, learning to let go, learning to be okay with not having a clean house or having toys around, and learning to be okay with, you know, making a mistake and forgiving myself. And, you know, at the end of the day, probably the hardest thing for me is, like, learning to be okay with nothing getting done on my checklist.
Yeah.
And I always have a checklist, and I look at it and I'm like, oh my gosh, I didn't do anything today. But then I have to remind myself, I did. I spent time with my kids, and that's the most important thing. So it's just kind of a daily thing for me to have to go through that process of, like, I did do things. This is okay. You know,
kind of I still make my checklist, and I put, like, cut Gus's toenails on it, and I check it off. Like,
I did that.
Yep.
I do that too. At least you feel like you did something.
Yes, exactly. Yep. Oh, vacuum. I'll like, after the end of the day, I'm like, I'll put it on. Oh, vacuum to the laundry. Oh, I already did that, but I'm going to put it on there and check it off.
Check it off. Yep. Exactly. I'm going to put feed the child. Oh, I did that one.
Perfect. There you go. Make muffins. Yes. Exactly. What song or movie would you say represents your time right now, and why?
So, I would say the movie Crank with Jason Statham. Have you seen it?
It's been a while, but I remember it, yes.
Yeah, so he gets poisoned, and in order to, like, keep his heart from stopping, he has to just keep his adrenaline up. So, the whole crazy movie.
Yeah.
The whole movie, he's just moving, and that is exactly how I feel like my life is.
That's a great analogy. I saw it, chuckle. I'm like, yep, that's perfect. That is perfect. Nice. I didn't put it on here, but if you're comfortable, I was kind of wondering myself, and if it's worth it on there, but, like, kind of conversations you have with Warwick about raising Black children. Would you be comfortable sharing any of those conversations or what you guys focus on at this age, or even in the near future? Like, we're talking about now, what are you kind of worried about in the near future?
Yeah. Oh, that's a big question.
I know. Sorry. It's a lot. I wanted to, I'd be remiss to ask you about it.
It's a good one. Talk. Yeah. So one of the biggest ones that we've been dealing with right now because of the age of our kids is what discipline looks like.
Yeah.
And you might think, like, oh, what does that have to do with race? But it does, because Black boys, Black girls, Black children in the United States can't do what white kids can do.
Yeah.
So we have to raise our kids with a certain level of respect, like learning authority, learning how to respect each other, learning how to respect themselves, because if they are in class, for example, they go to school and they yell at their white teacher, there's a good chance that they could be expelled for yelling, you know, for different things, like for things that white kids can do, Black get in trouble. way more frequently, and their punishment is way harsher. And so my husband and I have been having to have a huge dialogue about what does that look like, because we don't want to traumatize our kids. We don't want to like put that pressure on them, and yet at the same time we kind of have to. Just more than our white counterparts because of the situation and wanting to keep them safe. And so what does that look like? So we've been dialoguing a lot about like, how do we do that? Like, do we incorporate spanking? Is that a part of our culture? You know, Warwick grew up with that. We both grew up with that, but he grew up with that more from his side of the family. What does that look like? Like, do we teach them to say please and thank you? Do we teach them to apologize? Or do we let them, you know, there's so many different parent philosophies. And so we're trying to figure out what that looks like from a Black perspective. The idea in mind that we have to keep them safe as they grow up. And it's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of, more tears on my end. Like, why do we have to have this type of difference between raising Black kids and white kids?
Yeah. And is it,
I understand why, but it's heartbreaking.
Well, yeah, and for you too, like, I don't know how you grew up, but like, yeah, is it hard for you to learn that, like, my kids won't be able to grow up the way I grew up, with that little more carefree, not looking over my shoulder, like your husband was saying. He now doesn't have to do as much in Spain, but had to do in the U.S. How does that make you feel? How do you cope with that? And how kind of, you know, like, do you then, you know, have conversations with your husband, but then do you then may talk with your family about, you know, your parenting styles and how it's going to look different? Does that make sense?
Exactly. Like, for example, we will never let our children play with toy guns. Yep. Like, that's just off the table. So we, like, no toy guns, not even squirt guns.
Yeah.
So we have to tell our families, like, more my family, because his family understands, but more my family inside of the family, like, no toy guns as gifts. Like, it's just not a possibility. It's not an option. You know, or anything like that. Like, if our kids are playing with sticks and pretending to shoot a gun, like, no, like, you can't do that. Just those little things that you wouldn't think about.
Yeah.
Well,
you almost have to say, like, you shut down, like, so much faster, maybe seeing that. Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. You know, like, another example of, like, one example I heard was from a Black mom, and she was saying her son was playing with boys in the neighborhood, and they were going to different houses and shooting hoops, like, in different people's yards.
Yep.
Our Black son cannot do that. That's trespassing onto people's property, and that is a no-no. Like, you can't do that as a Black boy. It's very unsafe. Yep. And so teaching your children to understand those differences as well, like, well, they're doing it, why can't I do that? And to be able to have that, almost that street knowledge of, like, what's okay and what's not okay to keep you safe. Yeah. Just so much. There's so much that we're gonna.
Yeah, and we were working with our children, and, you know, Gus is only four, we've had a lot of conversation, and we live, you know, maybe a couple blocks away from where George Floyd was murdered, and we can talk about what looks like to be an ally to your friends of color that you're going to have, you know, and what would you say, it's a weird question, but, like, what are you hoping your children will find in their friends of white friends or Spanish friends, I guess it would do, you know, you'd say, is there, you know, does that make sense? Like, what you're hoping he will find in friends?
Definitely. Yeah. Teach, you know, your white boys to be allies and advocates. Like, if they see a teacher who's mistreating, you know, another boy of color in their class or another girl of color in their class, how can your children stand up for those friends as well? You know, for, like, that's a huge thing.
Yeah.
And recognizing that there's differences in how they get treated versus their friends.
All right. Ooh, fun.